Hello and welcome to Tantramar Report on CHMA 106.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the heart of the Maritimes, Sackville, New Brunswick, the traditional lands of the Mi'kmaq people, unceded in the treaties of peace and friendship first signed with settlers in 1725. I'm Erica Butler. It's Tuesday, June 1st. Coming up on today's show, flags are at half-mast in Sackville and shoes are being collected for a planned memorial for the victims of the Kamloops Residential School. Two people have died in single vehicle collisions on New Brunswick highways. The Owens is back in business with by appointment viewing on offer. And now that No Mo May is over, we chat with some folks who gave it a shot. But first, the COVID case update. For the third day in a row, there were 5 new cases of COVID-19 reported in Zone 1. 3 of the new cases are related to previous cases, but 2 remain under investigation. The active case count in Zone 1 is now 40, the highest it's been since early February in the final days of the last red phase of restrictions for Zone 1. There was further bad news in the rest of the province. 5 new cases have been reported in the Fredericton region, with 2 under investigation, and 2 new cases in the Bathurst region, both under investigation. Province-wide, there are 146 active cases of COVID-19 as of Monday afternoon. Just 655 tests were conducted in the province on Sunday, with 318 of those happening in Zone 1. In Nova Scotia, there were 17 new cases of COVID-19 reported on Monday, and the total number of active cases in that province dropped to 448. There were no new cases reported in the Cumberland Health Network, and there are currently 8 active cases in Cumberland. PEI reported 2 new cases on Monday, both related to travel outside of Atlantic Canada. The island province now has 10 active cases of COVID-19. Newfoundland and Labrador also announced 2 new cases Monday. That province now has 101 active cases of COVID-19. The province is encouraging New Brunswickers and anyone who has been living in the province for at least 4 weeks to make an appointment for a COVID-19 vaccine. Yesterday, under 3,500 new first doses were reported as administered. That's well below the rate needed to meet the province's first reopening plan goal of 520,000 people with a first dose by June 7th. Over 85,000 people still need to get their first dose in order to meet the goal. A CHMA reader listener recently sent in a vaccine-related question to CHMA News. Becky Whittem wondered about the process for people who may be moving out of New Brunswick before the time comes for a second dose. Department of Health spokesperson Sean Barry assured us that even those who move between shots will still have access to a shot. Each province has a reciprocity agreement in place to ensure that all Canadians will have access to the COVID-19 vaccine for their first or second dose, regardless of the province or territory that they are residing in, writes Barry. He says that details on second dose sequencing in New Brunswick will be announced soon. The opening of eligibility to register for a second dose will be connected to the date the first dose was received, says Barry. That will apply to people leaving New Brunswick and people coming into New Brunswick from another jurisdiction. The province has set a goal of August 2nd to have 520,000 New Brunswickers vaccinated with 2 doses of a COVID-19 vaccine. The town of Sackville and Mount Allison University have joined dozens of other entities across the country in lowering their flags to half-mast and keeping them lowered for 215 hours, or about 9 days, in recognition of the tragic news that the remains of 215 children were found on site of a former Indian residential school in Kamloops, BC. Also, some Sackville residents have taken on a mission to collect 215 pairs of children's shoes for the purposes of a memorial, similar to others that have been undertaken across the country, in the wake of the discovery at Kamloops. Donations of shoes can be dropped off by 2 p.m. today at 17 Wellington Street in Sackville. The 215 pairs of shoes will be displayed outside Town Hall in Sackville. Indian residential schools operated in Canada between the 1870s and the 1990s. The last Indian residential school closed in 1996. It's estimated that over 150,000 Indian, Inuit, and Métis children between the ages of 4 and 16 attended Indian residential schools. Premier Blaine Higgs tweeted Monday morning to say that flags at the provincial legislature in Fredericton and all other provincial buildings would be lowered to half-mast. Higgs wrote, "We grieve with the First Nations over the tragic loss of these young lives." While New Brunswick did not have any residential schools, this province did have 12 day schools, all operated by the Roman Catholic Church and located on or near First Nations reserves. Similar to residential schools, Indigenous people were forced to attend day schools. Parise Sudith is a New Brunswick lawyer providing assistance to class action claimants regarding day schools. In early 2020, Sudith told CBC, "The education system was mandatory, colonial, religious, paternalistic, and discriminatory." The last New Brunswick day school to close was in Metapenagia on July 31st, 1992. The only residential school in the Maritimes was in Shubenacadie, Nova Scotia, and is now the subject of investigations by the Mi'kmaq Nova Scotia Canada Tripartite Forum and led by Mi'kmaq elders. The work involves the use of ground-penetrating radar, non-invasive technology similar to that used in Kamloops. So far, no graves or human remains have been found at the site. The Gwilmug Maglusuan Mi'kmaq Rights Initiative says they will continue searching and will ensure the site is fully investigated. If you are struggling with this story or other recent news about Kamloops, please note that there is a National Indian Residential School Crisis Line available 24/7 at this number, 1-866-925-4419. Two people died recently in single-vehicle collisions in New Brunswick, according to information released by the New Brunswick RCMP yesterday. On May 30th, a 60-year-old man from Cochrane died following a single-vehicle crash on Route 134. Rishabakto RCMP believe the vehicle was traveling southbound when it veered off the road and collided with a tree. The driver and lone occupant of the vehicle died at the scene. On May 26, a 32-year-old woman died following a single-vehicle crash on the Trans-Canada Highway near Barry Mills outside Moncton. Caledonia RCMP believe the vehicle was traveling eastbound when it veered off the road, hitting a guardrail and rolled down an embankment. The driver, who was the lone occupant of the vehicle, was transported to hospital, where she later died as a result of her injuries. The Owens Art Gallery is finally reopening its doors to the public today by appointment only. The gallery walls remained barren during the school year to make room for students who needed the space for socially distanced classes. Now, any member of the public can book a free one-hour session to view current and future exhibitions as long as public health allows it. There are five exhibitions on display as of today, including the 2021 grad show. Also on display are exhibits such as Bait, a reimagining of Inuit hunting and fishing traditions, Like a Dog Chewing a Bone, featuring beloved animal companions, Woodpoint artist John Haney's neon work, Hot Tips, and also Alex Colville's painting of Milton Gray. Visitors can visit in a bubbled group of up to 10 and may book multiple hour blocks if they need more time to appreciate the exhibitions. All public health guidelines, including continuous mask wearing and social distancing, will be followed. All patrons are required to give their full name and contact information upon registration and can book a time at mounta.ca/owens. Today is the last day to submit nominations for the Town of Sackville Annual Volunteer Recognition Awards. The town is accepting nominations in four categories, recognizing 10 years, 25 years, and 50 years of community service. There is also an award recognizing volunteer service for students in Tantramar Regional High School and its feeder schools. Details and nomination forms are available at the town's website. NOMO May wound up yesterday, and we thought we would check in with some folks who participated to see how it went. Barbara Clayton grew up with manicured lawns and still has an affinity for the clean look of a mowed lawn, but her family participated in NOMO May anyway. I started off asking her why.
We have a big yard, which we have been very reluctant to mow all of. So, and we've always had it in our mind to kind of rewild, I don't know what's the best term, but you know, like let the yard go wild, I guess. But we have a front, but the front yard is, we've always tried to keep more manicured. So and then when there was this movement to No Mow May, and it helps the pollinators, and we really were supportive of that. And, you know, and it's also nice not having to mow your own lawn, frankly. Yeah, so just like the idea of helping the bees and the insects and that kind of thing. We know that insects are in trouble, and so that's why, just to try to do the more environmentally friendly thing, I guess.
So you didn't mow the areas that you normally would have. Is that?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. So we would normally, like, at the backyard, we sometimes mow more or less, depending on what we're sort of doing and what we feel like. But we always kind of try to keep the front and the yard that's visible from the street more. We try to keep that mowed.
Okay.
And also, you know, we have neighbors that mow regularly. We have one lot on one side of us that's an empty lot that's never mowed. And then on the other side of us, we have neighbors that, you know, they have a ride-on mower and they're, you know, they're regularly out there. So there is a certain pressure.
I was going to say, is there some peer pressure, some neighborhood pressure to sort of maintain especially the street-facing part of your lawn?
Yeah, totally. And nobody, I don't think anybody would say anything. But yeah, I mean, and frankly, I grew up with manicured lawns, and I think it looks better when it's mowed. I have an internal struggle. I mean, there's a sense that there's social pressure, and there's an internal kind of struggle too. It's like, I would think it would look better if it were mowed. But I had to, you know, like today I looked out and I could see that there were bees in the front yard, in the forget-me-nots and the bugle weed. Like, we have bugle weed in our lawn now, which is those little purple, it's a little purpley blue flower that's quite, they're pretty, but they are, you know, they kind of take over. So we have that throughout our yard now, but the bees do love it. Like, and so I looked out and I could see that there were bees in it. And I was like, okay, you know, this is why we're doing this. And yeah.
So there was some gratification.
For sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, and the dandelion, I actually like dandelions. Like, I think they're, especially when they're in bloom, they're very pretty. They get kind of ugly after they bloom. But yeah, so there's kind of this readjustment that's going on. It's like, you know, when I grew up in Calgary, there was a lot, I suppose, like across Canada, there was everybody sprayed and mowed all the time. And you wanted a perfectly green, short lawn. That's what I grew up with. And so I've got this struggle going on to readjust my aesthetic. But I think it's, yeah, I think if we, I would love to have a sign too that said, you know, participating in No Mow May for the pollinators or something to sort of signal like this is deliberate.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We're not just being lazy.
So no one's commented on your lawn or anything during May, but you think you probably will go back to mowing as June rolls around?
Well, probably the front, you know, the part that's visible to the street. But our long-term plan is to try to have less and less lawn. Like, to put more, and I've been gradually doing that on the front. Like, I put in a rain garden. I planted a couple of blueberry bushes. And so I'm trying to gradually take up the lawn with other plants and, you know, thinking about trying to put in edible plants. That's why we put the blueberries in and, you know, kind of gradually get rid of the lawn as much as possible.
I see. And do you think you'll do it again next year?
I think, yeah, for sure. I mean, especially if hoping it becomes a bit of a thing, you know. Basically, what I would like is to have have more native species and a more natural kind of wild yard, but also one that looks nice, right?
You want to bridge that gap between sort of the wilderness and sort of civilized life, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. That was Barbara Clayton of Sackville. Jeff McKinnon usually tries to keep some dandelions intact on his lawn because they're a great food source for his bees. I visited Jeff and we took a walk around his large yard area, which includes a garden, lots of now unmowed grassy areas, and an apiary.
Gosh, how many hives are over there?
So I started this spring with 3. I went into last fall with 4. I lost 1 over the winter. So 75% survival rate, which is fairly high. I'm usually about 50 to 60% survival. I thought I had 100% come through, but one of the hives ended up queenless, so that's pretty much a dead hive. I combined that into the other hives that survived. And then since the spring buildup, I've been able to split the hives to control their population a bit and grow the apiary. Yeah. So now there's 6 hives. 3 of them have active queens that are laying. And the 3 others are in the process of producing a new queen.
Now, how far do these guys go for food, would you say?
About 3 kilometers would be their normal foraging range. But if they don't have to fly 3 kilometers, they won't. Mm-hmm. A lot of bees prefer certain species of pollen, so some will go after only apple blossoms, and some will go after only dandelions, and some will go after only willow. So the ones that prefer dandelions, if they don't have to fly 3 kilometers, they'll just find the nearest source and go at it, gather what they can. So I've seen an increase in traffic in the yard. We've had to be more careful walking around the yard, just because there has been more bee traffic nearby, walking through the lawn.
Yeah, this is like an LA like turnpike right here, like this, in terms of bees, I guess. Like, it's a very, very highly densely populated area.
Exactly, yeah. So a lot of them will fly a little further to get away from areas that have been scoured by other bees. But having a nearby source of pollen for them, it saves their energy. They have to fly less, they end up living longer and being able to forage for a longer period of time.
Do you think you've noticed a difference in, like, have you noticed other properties in the area also doing no-mow May?
I have, yeah. A few properties up the road and, around have let their dandelions grow, which is nice. I don't know what kind of impact they've seen from these beehives, if they're within that 3 kilometer foraging range. I have noticed a bigger participation in just letting the dandelions grow.
When you mow now, like, I guess dandelion scene as it winds down, you said you can mow, and that won't be a big shock to the bees, will it?
No, they'll find food sources. Their production will slow down, so there are several main flows that happen through the summer where there's an incredible amount of nectar and pollen coming into the hive. Dandelions happen to be that first significant flow of nectar and pollen that come into the hive. Then we move into clover, and then later on in the season, goldenrod is another significant source. So between those lulls, I'll try to time my mowing so that once the dandelions are done and gone to seed, I'll mow and then let the clover establish, and then that'll be their next significant flow. But there's all kinds of other sources for them in the meantime. There's strawberries blossoming, apples are just coming out, pear trees will be just coming out, blueberries is another incredible source, especially around here. So there will be plenty of sources other than dandelions for them to forage on until that next significant flow of clover starts to establish.
Yeah, I've been wondering in terms of the no-mow May sort of movement, if how much difference that extra month and the timing of that month would make. And I guess, like, we see the flowers just bursting now at mm-hmm. this time of year. So June, I guess there will be plenty of food. So it really does, I guess, make a difference to not only honeybees, but other
We've
pollinators.
Seen, yeah, not only honeybees, pollinators, but I've seen more bird activity in the air. The finches seem to like the dandelion seeds that are being produced now. And so even bird activity, I've noticed an increase in our yard among the smaller warblers and finches that like to feed on those seeds. So I also should mention, like, they have had this incredible source of pollen and nectar to start the year off, and I did come through the winter stronger than I have in the past. Like, I have noticed a significant rapid buildup this spring. But there are a lot of factors that go into that. Like, it's not just the pollen and nectar and food source that's going to contribute to that buildup. A lot of that had to do with the weather that we had over the winter. It wasn't a particularly harsh winter. And so that is going to contribute to a strong spring buildup. If they didn't have to use as many of their food sources that they had going into winter, then they're going to come out of spring further ahead. A lot of it's to do with the beekeeper's management of their hives. So the way that I try to prepare them for success, the next spring starts this year. So as we move into summer solstice, that's kind of peak foraging time. That's when I start to think of winter. It's depressing, I know. Like, first day of summer, well, you got to start thinking about the fall food sources and getting these bees built up so they have a chance to survive winter.
So should we be having Nomo September and October?
Yeah, let's time it with like those three significant pollen sources that I mentioned, the clover, goldenrod, dandelion. If Nomo could be coordinated with those, it would make the bees and the beekeepers very happy.
One of the things Jeff noticed during this Nomo May was the earlier appearance of dandelion pollen in the wax that the bees produce. In early spring, beekeepers feed bees with sugar syrup.
And so that pale white wax is built out of just sugar syrup, artificial feed. The bright yellow stuff is stuff that they're building out of dandelions. Like, it's being trampled on and the pollen is dropping off them, giving it that bright yellow color. Oh. So that's one of the things that I noticed, that, okay, maybe this is making a difference, that we're getting a lot more dandelion pollen in. It's bringing that bright colored wax in instead of that pale yellow kind of artificial wax that they build out of the sugar syrup. So that's the first thing I noticed when I went into the hives this spring. I usually don't get that bright yellow color until later on. But this year it's like they won't take artificial feed if another natural source is available. They prefer the real deal, like most of us.
They like their artisanal.
The artisanal pollen and, artisanal nectar. There's just more nutrients. Instead of just a plain sugar syrup that has no other minerals or nutrients that they can use, they have a natural source that gives them other kinds of proteins and minerals that they can use. So that white comb is kind of the artificial stuff, and the bright yellow stuff that started coming in a lot earlier than normal is the stuff that's been trampled on by pollen-loaded feet.
Jeff's neighbor's yard is a stark contrast to his, a neatly mowed green expanse of lawn. But Jeff says his neighbor enjoys mowing, whereas for him, he's happy to forgo the task.
Yeah. I just don't enjoy mowing. I would rather, like, I've made mead out of honey from my beehives and dandelion blossoms, dandelion mead. So I would rather use this stuff for some kind of benefit versus mowing it down and creating a monoculture in the lawn. Seeing what comes up. Having this stuff has been incredible. Some people call it Creeping Charlie, some people call it Wild Violet. But if my whole lawn could be this, just a low-growing, low-maintenance, the bees love it. Like, we don't walk through that patch of Creeping Charlie just because I know that it's loaded with bees. But if my whole lawn could be that, I'd be thrilled with a bit of clover mix thrown in and goldenrod in the fall. Mm-hmm. But something low maintenance like that, that doesn't require mowing, it grows, it stays low to the ground. I mean, it's...
Yeah, it has that look, that neater look, as opposed
kind
to taller grass.
Spreads out, yeah. But no, it has been neat to see what comes in without cutting it down every week or week and a half.
Yeah, we're all getting a lesson in botany, I guess.
Yeah, just what can grow if allowed to grow.
Mm-hmm. That was Jeff McKinnon, beekeeper and Nomo May enthusiast. The town of Sackville dabbled in Nomo May this year, foregoing mowing of some areas around town. Senior manager Kieran Miller says it was a learning experience, and the town may consider more sites for Nomo May next year, as well as some activities to increase the visibility of the movement, such as a sign-making workshop. That's it for CHMA's Tantramar Report for this Tuesday, June 1st. As always, for story ideas, tips, or feedback, contact us at news@chmafm.com. I'm Erica Butler. Thanks for listening.